So Dr. Kayla Daniel, coming up in just a second, the author of The Whole Soy Story. When the title was originally pitched to me, I thought, is there more to the soy story than I thought there could be? And I thought, well, how big could this book possibly be? Oh, it is very dense and filled with footnotes and very well articulated and entertainingly told. The conspiracy, if you will, to create the market for soy and then to fill it and then to keep finding new ways to take this really rather unpleasant, unflavorful, gas-producing bean and turn it into a billion-dollar product. It's a stroke of genius if it were good for you. But that's not even proven, and there's so much more to know. We'll get to the whole soy story coming up next on Coast to Coast Live. This is Ian Punnett. Dr. Kayla Daniel, I am in many ways a test subject for your book, The Whole Soy Story. I spent about a year and a half, almost 2 years, being a vegetarian, eating nothing but soy. And by the end of that time, I was so deprived of protein, it was driving me crazy. And I was so glad. I mean, I started eating meat just a couple of months ago. But part of that was this feeling that I just wasn't getting out of soy what soy was promising. So I'm a perfect consumer for your book because there are a couple pages here already. I'm going, oh, yeah, that's totally me. How about you? Were you ever a soy proponent?
No, but I was a vegetarian at one point in my life, and I got interested in this subject because I was seeing so many sick people who were eating a lot of soy, vegetarians eating a lot of soy, vegans, and health-conscious people who were hearing that soy is a miracle food, and their health was not doing well on it, and that's what got me started.
And so let me ask you then, if you weren't a proponent, when you were a vegetarian, were you at least eating a lot of soy back then?
I wasn't eating a lot of soy. I never liked soy milk or soy protein powders or any of those newfangled products. I did eat some tofu, and I still eat miso soup, which I enjoy. I still eat tempeh. But the rest of my diet was a vegetarian diet at that point.
And the tofu, that was something I was trying to eat a lot more of, and actually something I enjoy. I started using tofu a long time ago when I was broke in college, and I would mix it with ricotta cheese and other things to make something expensive like ricotta go farther. And I noticed that the soy absorbed the flavor well, and I could make a pretty good lasagna using about half as much ricotta and more protein with the tofu. That seemed to make sense to me at the time. So I've been using it for a long time, but it never really replaced the protein I was looking for, I don't think.
No, there's a myth that soy is a complete protein. And yes, it does contain all the amino acids, all the essential amino acids, but contains all of them is not the same as contains them in sufficient quantities and in the right ratios. And a whole lot of people who replace meat or dairy proteins with soy end up being malnourished with protein shortages. And they're particularly short of the amino acids methionine, and that has so much to do with healthy hair and muscle growth and energy and other factors that have everything to do with how healthy we feel.
All right. I want to tell you the soy story as I understand it, as it's been related to me, and then you can pick it apart, okay?
Okay.
I think I was told, if not explicitly remember reading somewhere, that in the Orient, in Asia, in all parts of Asia, they eat a lot of soy, and that's why they live longer, live healthfully longer, and that's why they keep their weight down, is they actually eat very little meat product, like animal product, and instead they have a high soy diet, a high tofu diet, maybe even specifically, and that's why they live so much longer than us fat, bloated Americans. And I understood that to be true, and that had been proven over the centuries, and it goes back thousands of years that in Asia people have been eating tofu and living longer. What's true or not true about that story?
Well, first of all, soy was first used in Asia as a fertilizer, as green manure. It was greatly valued for its use in crop rotation.
Okay.
And about 3,000 years ago, people figured out how to turn the soybean into a healthy food, and that's when they first developed soybean paste with fermenting, processing, and so forth. Now, 3,000 years ago might sound like a long time, but in terms of human evolution, that's very recent.
Well, but it's still that the story then is still true that Asians eat a lot of, you know, soy products. They just eat soybean paste. How do they eat the soybean paste?
Well, soybean paste is used generally in sauces and soups. But the thing is, they don't eat a lot of soy. They eat very small quantities of it. And yes, they do use it regularly in the diet, but we're talking small quantities. There are parts of China where soy is hardly in the diet at all, and then there's places like Japan where it's heavier, but we're talking maybe the average of a quarter cup a day. And we're also talking different types of...
Whoa. Am I still on? Okay, I'm there, but she got disconnected. Whoa, that was really eerie. Now, it makes you... when like having read a lot of this book, it really makes me wonder whether somebody... driving around her neighborhood with some device to block phones because there is so much at stake in maintaining the soy myth. And I say soy myth in that, just as she said, it's not that there isn't some soy usage and benefit, but that we are being sold this whole soy package, the whole soy lifestyle, if you will. And this goes into, and I hope we get her back. If not, it'll be a very interesting evening, however. But if we get her back, I think what we'll hear is that the soy story, there's a very conscious effort to try to take this inexpensive protein source and turn it into something valuable. And to turn it into something palatable, and the extraordinary lengths that people would go to do that. That was really weird. Did you lose power over at your place or something, Doctor?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, it was very strange on this end. I mean, it sounded violent on this end.
Strange like, on this end, too.
Like somebody from the soy people ran in and hung up your phone. And then, and by the way, what has been the reaction to the whole soy story from the soy industry?
Well, they started out by ignoring me, hoping that I'd go away. But since that hasn't happened, they've now moved into discrediting me as much as possible.
So they're discrediting you or discrediting your research? Because there's about 30 pages of footnotes in this book, right?
Right. They're hoping people don't get the book to find that out. They're discrediting me personally and also the research.
Well, I mean, what do they tell you? That your mother dresses you funny? Or, I mean, what are they saying about you?
Well, they've challenged my degree, which is from an accredited university.
Which is what? Where's your degree from?
It's from the Union Institute and University.
Okay.
And it's a fully accredited school that's accredited by the North Central Association, the same accreditation agency that accredits Oberlin and Case Western and Ohio State, University of Michigan, and other fine schools.
Okay. All right. So that's not going to fly. So then what do they go after? Like hairstyle? Hemlines? What do they say after that?
Well, they accuse me of taking vast amounts of money from the beef and dairy industries.
Ah, have you been taking money from the beef and dairy industry?
I haven't taken a cent. And in fact, they don't like me any better than the soy industry because I do not promote supermarket commercial dairy or factory farming. I am a supporter of small farmers, grass-fed cattle, free-range poultry, and so forth.
Okay, but could you be being paid under the table by grass-feeding farmers that have come together to pay you mass sums of money to destroy soy?
Well, I could be if they gave me a few eggs here and there, but...
You'd be easily bought if they offered, is what you said. So you're not getting any money. So you aren't on anybody's take.
None at all.
Okay.
Totally independent.
All right. And what have you done with this doctoral degree of yours?
Well, my dissertation was an earlier version of the book, The Whole Soy Story. I spent more than 4 years researching the book, And that was inspired by the numbers of sick people that I was seeing who were eating a lot of soy, and that it aroused my curiosity. I started investigating, found thousands of studies going back 100 years, and that ultimately ended up as all those footnotes in my book.
All right. So that brings us back to where we were in the timeline of soy, that there were, going back, say, 1,000 years or 3,000 years, Asians have been eating soy. Is there a similar story in Europe? I mean, is there a soy equivalent that has always been consumed by Westerners?
No. Soy is relatively recent in the Western diet, and it was originally brought over. The soybeans were used as ballast in the ships. That's how it first came over. And then people like Ben Franklin, really, they were very interested in the soybean as a curiosity, and he sent some back from France to the United States and advised that it be grown, see what they could do with it.
Right.
But soy basically was not eaten in the West, and it was, like in Asia, first used as green manure, as fertilizer, and it's very good for that.
But it, as you say, mixed in with soups or used as a paste and consumed a little bit by some Asians, not universally by everybody, and not generally thought of. Is it thought of by Asians as something that extends their life in different Asian cultures?
Miso soup in Japan is considered a real elixir and something good for longevity. But keep in mind, they're not eating very much of that. Now, tofu, that was invented in the Zen monasteries, and soy is very heavily used in the monasteries because it helps the monks maintain their vows of celibacy.
Okay, you have to explain that.
Well, soy contains plant estrogens, and these plant estrogens are not identical to human estrogens, but they're close enough so that they can interfere with hormone production. And with men, it can interfere with testosterone production and utilization in the body. So soy has a long and distinguished history of helping monks maintain their vows of celibacy in Asia.
Because it would cut down then on their testosterone, or it would make them less interested in sex.
Exactly.
Okay. And this is also a threat used by some women, too, isn't it?
Yes, in Japan, there's the households where they're eating the most soy, the most tofu, or where the husband's been unfaithful and the wife feeds them extra servings of soy.
So that sort of uses like an adultery elixir as well.
Exactly, or a punishment.
Okay. And is it not true that some women will eat soy, too, if they want to cut down on their libido for whatever reason?
It would have that effect for several reasons, in addition to affecting estrogen and testosterone production. And women do have testosterone, just less than men.
Right.
But in addition to that, it affects the thyroid. And when people's thyroids are down, which is the side effect we see most often from people who eat too much soy, the libido goes down. So that's one of the side effects.
All right, so we'll move the timeline up a little bit. We know that Ben Franklin was really interested in soybean and whether or not it could be used as a cash crop for this, you know, fledgling nation. And it was a durable kind of crop. When did people in America start eating soybeans?
Well, they didn't really start eating the soybeans, but they started splitting the soybean into soy oil and soy protein. Now, the soy protein initially was something they didn't know what to do with. But the soy oil was being heavily promoted as vegetable oil and something to be used in products. So right from the beginning, the Westerners and the Americans were seeing soy as something very different from the way it was used in Asia. In Asia, they were doing whole soybean products. Here, they were dividing that bean into, well, the first golden commodity there was the soy oil, which is what we see in most vegetable oils, and partially hydrogenated soy oil is in so many products in the marketplace.
And it's better for you?
No, that's not very good for us.
It's not good for us. Okay, so if it's not good for us, why do people think anything from soy is supposed to be better for you?
Well, that's an interesting question because for years, as the reputation for soy protein was built up by the soy industry, And they did that because they had it left over from the soy oil manufacturer, and they were trying to promote it and turn it into something they could sell. As soy protein gained a reputation as a health food, soy oil has sort of jumped on that too. And whereas just a couple years ago you would never see soy oil in the products sold at Whole Foods or Wild Oats or other natural stores, now we're starting to see that soy oil creeping into products.
But if it's not good for you, then is it just because they've convinced the consumer that the consumer needs it?
I think so. Soy has been given a really good reputation as being something that's healthy and good for us and protecting us against all sorts of diseases, everything from heart disease to cancer. And the research on that is inconsistent and contradictory at best, with some research showing that it can cause those very health problems.
That would be bad. So what's the best evidence for soy's usefulness, for soy's beneficial qualities?
Well, there aren't very many. If we eat miso soup once in a while or tempeh once in a while, it's a nutritious food. It has vitamins and minerals, and it can be tasty, and it can work in the context of a varied diet. The problem is that soy isn't being promoted just as a food, which in the context of a varied diet would not be a problem for most of us, but that it's being promoted as a miracle food that can cure everything from cancer to ingrown toenails, and that's just not true.
Okay, because I just happened to have in my kitchen, my wife had bought a box of Weight Watchers cereal, and it was all about soy. It's all wrapped up. And then I had this other bar. It was like an energy bar, just kind of your average energy bar. And I thought, well, that doesn't have any soy on it. And I looked at it, and right there was the number one product in that was soybeans. And it just seems like, especially when we're talking about health foods, things that are supposed to give you a better lifestyle, it's become a prerequisite that it has to have some soy in it or people will think it's bad for them.
Well, soy is being used as an additive in so many of these products. And years ago, that was considered something that was not desirable. When you think about things like adding soy protein to hamburgers, that was something that people did if they were poor. It was not considered something that you would do if you could afford the 100% hamburger. And what's happened is, as soy's reputation as a health food has been cultivated, manufacturers are finding they can put soy in more and more products, and most people don't mind, at least if it doesn't affect the taste.
Well, they'll go out of their way for it in some respects.
And some will.
Because, I mean, this is what it says in the box of the new Weight Watchers Cinnamon Cluster Crunch cereal. You ready?
I'm ready.
Soy protein. This is they're touting it on the outside, like now with soy. And on the back, it's one of the three delicious ingredients. It says soy protein, one of the best non-animal protein sources. Oh, happened again. God, that's so freaky. It happened again, didn't it? Nikki, I mean, I'm still on, right? Okay, that's just weird. I'm sure her degree is legitimate, but I don't know about the accreditation of her phone company. I'll read it to the rest of you. Ready? Soy protein, one of the best non-animal protein sources known to man. It provides an excellent balance of all 9 essential amino acids, which are building blocks that help maintain lean muscle mass and healthy metabolism. So what's wrong with that picture? Well, we'll tell you in just a minute when we reconnect with Dr. Kayla Daniel, the whole soy story coming up. And there's one part of this thing which they don't want to tell you, one of the dirty little secrets of soy. There are many. We'll tell you all about them. So at least if you're going to eat soy, you'll know the whole soy story. You'll know the whole soy truth. I mean, in some of these cases, by the end of the night, if you're eating a lot of soy, you may be driving through a Wendy's before this is all over. Coming up on Coast to Coast Live, this is Ian Punnett. So we're talking with Dr. Kayla Daniel, we hope, when we come back here in just a second. 2 major phone interruptions. Hopefully you've got that worked out, because the whole soy story is pretty darn interesting, especially when you hear the difference between what the science says about soy and what the marketing says about soy. And, of course, the difference in between that are the people who are making money off it. Does it really bring you any health benefit? Does it bring you a health detriment? We'll get to all of that coming up next on Coast to Coast Live. This is Ian Punnett. The whole soy story, Dr. Kayla Daniel. All right, so hopefully no more problems with the phone because it's really freaking me out. But I do want to get back to where we were. And I guess each time we get interrupted, we kind of get back into a different direction. So let's start from the top. So they have soy. It's developing. They're getting the soybean oil out. That turns out to be a valuable product. But they realize that all the leftovers, the soy byproduct, the soybean meal, if you will, they need to find a way to use that. And so what do? They give it to animals for a long time? They use it as fertilizer? What do they do with that?
It does make an excellent fertilizer, but of course the chemical fertilizer companies have that market cornered. So they try to feed a lot of this soybean protein or soy meal to animals, but there's only so much you can feed to animals before the animals become sick or die prematurely or have birth defect problems.
Why is that?
Well, there's all of the problems that are also associated with the human animal, but it's a little different with each particular animal. But for one thing, too much soy in the diet will affect an animal's thyroid, and then they get fatter and lazier, and that's not necessarily a problem for the animal raisers if they're just intending to have the animals live short term and they want a fat animal to butcher. So that's not necessarily a problem for them.
But in the idea is to have a very lean animal with a lot of muscle mass to butcher.
And you would not get that with too much soy protein because
okay.
of the amino acids in soy are not in the best possible ratio for protein to build muscle mass and for other uses in the body. And we need protein for immune support and for just about all functions of the body. And so in terms of soy feed for animals, the United States Department of Agriculture did years and years of studies where they worked on finding ways that this feed could be good for the animals. And so they've come up with, they add vitamins, minerals, amino acids, fatty acids, all sorts of things are added to the animal feed to keep the animals as healthy as possible for as long as they want those animals to be healthy.
Okay, so they still use soy protein to feed animals, but you can't just feed them soy because that would, like, kill them. So you have to add a bunch of other stuff in there to make it more digestible and healthier for the animal.
That's right. Now, with chicken feed, you can't have more than 25% soy protein. So they have to add other things to the product. They can't feed them just soy.
What would happen if you fed a chicken just soy?
It would be an extremely unhealthy chicken, and even feeding the chicken 25% soy, people have done studies in their own barnyards, and they've discovered that the chickens fed soy were more hostile and also, interestingly enough, lazier, that the ones that were not on the soy feed had more energy. They were out pecking around the barnyard looking for other things and happier chickens on the whole. So a real
and happy
difference.
Chickens. And the problem with a hostile chicken is?
Well, you could get bitten.
Okay. Or they could bite each other, maybe.
Exactly.
Maybe there's less happiness in the hen house as a result. It ain't no hen party. We can just say that if they're all hostile.
Well said.
All right. So then the soy protein, so they give it to animals, but they can't give too much to animals. So what else do they try to do with the leftover soy product from making soybean oil? What else do they do with it?
Well, they've tried to turn that soy protein into people feed.
Okay.
Now, the big problem there was people don't usually like to eat soy protein. It's perceived as a poverty food or a hippie food. People have all these long memories of getting soy substitutes when meat was short and during the wars, and soy protein is used heavily in countries like Soviet Russia and Cuba and places where they don't have sufficient meat products. So,
wasn't there a reference to in ancient China to eating soy just shy of starvation or something like that? That you were only recommended to eat soy if it was that or death or something. Didn't I see that in your book?
Well, certainly during famines, the consumption of something like soy flour goes way up.
Oh, that's what it was. It was soy flour.
That's not normally eaten in Asia. And where the highest consumption of soy in parts of China, those are the very poorest places. They don't eat it if they can get pork and other foods to eat.
Yeah, but that was it. It was soy flour. That even soy flour was not recommended unless it was in times of famine.
Exactly.
Okay. So soy flour is like a whole other kind of byproduct of this then, too. Now, and you can use soy flour. Can you bake with soy flour like you could wheat flour?
Well, you are limited in the amount you can use in a product before it'll start tasting really bad and having problems with the texture. Soy flour is one of the earlier products that is not in favor anymore. It's got a real beany taste. It goes rancid very easily. And some of the new products, things like soy protein isolate, are what we're more likely to find in products today.
Okay. So, and generally, soybeans are just not a pleasant-tasting product anyway.
Well, they've had the food scientists and technology people really working hard to make these soybeans taste much better. And the products have gotten more and more bland and tasteless, and then they can add all sorts of things to improve the flavor or, in some cases, to cover up the beany flavor. And the products taste a whole lot better than they did, say, even 10 years ago.
Okay, and that's fair enough because, you know, if you add enough stuff to soy, then it can taste okay, right? If you throw enough salt and cheese or whatever else, or cheese flavoring or barbecue flavoring, you can dress up, say, fried soybeans, and you can sell them if you've got enough stuff on top of them.
Absolutely. And when we look at products that are becoming increasingly popular, like soy nuts as snacks, they're covered with sugar, with salt, with all sorts of different flavorings, all designed to cover up that beany flavor.
But then is there any benefit, like, say, a bag of Cheetos versus a bag of soy nuts that's already processed and filled with all this other stuff on top of it to make it more palatable? Is there any essential difference between one being a junk food and the other being a health food?
Well, they're both definitely junk foods, and I couldn't recommend either one of them. But the soy nuts, they're quite high in the plant estrogens, and that can be a real problem for some people. And also, we're seeing more and more people who are allergic to or sensitive to soy, so they have to watch out as well.
So soy is sort of naturally high allergenic food?
Soy is now considered one of the top 8 allergens.
Get out! Like, into what other? Who else is in the category?
Well, we would have eggs, milk, peanuts. Trying to remember what they all are. I've got eggs already.
But I mean, so right up there with, say, peanuts is almost says enough right there, because we know a lot of people with peanut allergies. But they're putting soy in everything, so there may be something that doesn't have peanuts in it, but if it has soy, it could also be creating an allergic reaction.
Well, soy and peanuts are in the same botanical family, and
okay.
People who are allergic to peanuts should be very cautious about eating soy, because the Swedish Food Administration has reported in some studies with their scientists that children who are allergic to peanuts and who also have asthma are at extreme risk of suddenly dying of anaphylactic shock if they even have a tiny bit of soy. And what's really scary is some of these children had not previously reacted to soy.
Now, is that true even if the soy is in the form of tofu?
Any form of soy. Although, theoretically, soy oil should not be a problem because it doesn't contain protein. But in reality, some people are so allergic that they're reacting to so many of these products.
Well, if you were allergic to peanuts, you wouldn't be having peanut oil, would you?
No.
Right. So it would only make sense. If you're allergic to soy, you wouldn't have soy oil either.
And partly it's a processing matter. If there's any imperfection at all in the manufacturing, a molecule of soy protein can get in there, and that's what the risk is.
Now, the last time we spoke, just before you got cut off there at the bottom of the hour, I was reading this off the back of the Weight Watchers Cinnamon Cluster Crunch cereal box. Here's what it said. Soy protein. Now, they tout this as one of the reasons why you should buy this cereal. It's filled with soy protein, one of the best non-animal protein sources known to man. It provides an excellent source of all 9 essential amino acids, which are building blocks that help maintain lean muscle mass and healthy metabolism. What's wrong with that?
Well, first of all, it does include all the 9 essential amino acids, but not in the right proportions and not in the right quantities. And many bodybuilders have gotten wise to that and consider soy protein to be an inferior protein. But what's really interesting to me about this soy being used by Weight Watchers is that in Japan, soy protein was fed to animals that they wanted to fatten up. They didn't give it to farm animals that they wanted to work, but to animals they wanted to fatten up.
Well, go ahead, please.
Well, soy will it will damage the thyroid, and we most often see that manifesting as hypothyroidism or low thyroid, with the typical symptoms of weight gain, fatigue, malaise, depression, all the things that keep people from moving and help them to put on weight.
Well, I have to say that when I was I go back to how we started in this conversation, when I originally stopped eating meat, and I felt really great for like the first 3 to 4 months. I really did. And I was eating a lot of fish and I was eating a lot of soy. And then I started eating a lot more soy. My wife was buying these soy crumbles, which we'll get back to coming up, like the hamburger flavored or the sausage flavored soy crumbles. And I was mixing that in sauces and I was cooking that up with pasta and I was doing other stuff. And I was following what I thought were very healthy recipes. And I noticed that even though I had lost a bunch of weight before I started eating soy, I suddenly gained a lot of it back eating soy. And that was really shocked me because I thought, wait a second, I thought I was really having a low-fat diet. And then when I stopped eating soy and I went back to eating regular meat, I immediately started losing weight again. Does that make sense to you?
I've heard so many stories like that, many, many stories. Sometimes people initially feel better and lose a little weight when they start eating soy because in some cases the soy will stimulate the thyroid and then they're burning their fat a little faster. But then the overstimulated thyroid will then go into long-term hypothyroidism, and that's when people start to slow down.
Okay. So that's what happened to me. So then the uses of this for women in particular, for a lot of these cereals, a lot of these products, and going back to the soy nuts, it seemed to be focused on the idea of if you've got PMS, if you suffer from, you know, strong PMS symptoms, one natural way to fight the PMS is to eat a lot of soy. And I've seen that in so many places.
Well, soy is being promoted very heavily, not only for PMS, but for menopausal symptoms.
Right.
And so many midlife women are eating a lot of soy, drinking a lot of soy milk, because they believe that that's the secret to going through menopause with ease and pain-free and so forth. But it doesn't usually work out that way. And the biggest problem is midlife women are at risk for thyroid problems anyway, and when you put soy into the picture, these women start to lose their energy, their hair starts to fall out, their skin dries up, and they attribute a lot of this to menopause. But we're seeing this most often with the women who are trying to do the best for themselves by eating what they think is a healthy diet.
All right, so are we seeing a reaction by doctors telling women not to eat a lot of soy? Has this gotten, are we seeing a response from the AMA on too much soy consumption?
No response from the AMA, but absolutely in terms of naturopathic doctors and many MDs as well starting to recognize that soy can be a problem for many, many men and women. And we're seeing it with oncologists are telling people who have women who have breast cancer that soy is an added risk factor for them. The word really is getting out.
Okay. Not to mention the fact that it gives you gas.
Right. Well, some of these new products, they have somehow remove the gas factors. But for years, the soy industry in its own publications would talk about the two main obstacles to getting Americans to want to eat soy. And the first obstacle was the beany taste. People didn't like the taste. The second factor was what they called the flatulence factor. And the soy industry did all sorts of studies, and they did studies with rats, dogs, pigs, cows, and college students and other animals. And these studies are really something to read. I mean, we can read about the college students being put into gas-tight pantaloons and fed soy diets and other diets. And they would measure just about everything, odor, quantities. They had professional odor judges and interesting studies.
Now, who had to be around to help them get those pants off? That's what I want to know.
I don't know.
I have a word for you. Interns. Whoever started that program, whoever started that, had interns, and that's who got to help the students get the pants off. So that's part of it, then, is it true even with, like, tofu and these soy crumbles that I was buying for a long time? Does that increase one's flatulence?
Tofu should not increase flatulence, but with some people it does. So... And the soy crumbles, I'm not sure of the specific product, but...
like the Morningstar Farms and other products that have packaged soy meat-tasting-like products.
If it's made with soy protein isolate, it may not be a gas producer. Soy flour is some of the worst for gas production.
So if it's got soy flour and if it's non-treated, unlike some of the classic soy products or like that, then it may produce more gas. All right. Then how did this all happen that these products end up catching part of the public imagination so much since the 1970s? How did that happen?
The soy industry realized they had a problem with Americans' perception of soybeans, and that was that soy was a hippie food or a poverty food. So they got to thinking how they could make Americans not only want to eat soy, but want to pay well for the privilege. And they came up with the idea of turning soy into a health food, because that way upscale people who were thinking about their health would give it a good image as something that was desirable and worth paying for and that would contribute to disease prevention and longevity. So that's what they came up with, and they have been marketing soy as a health food since. They've sponsored many, many studies to show that soy will cure this and cure that, and of course there's so many ways we can design studies to come up with any outcome that we would like, and they were very good at that. They have put on symposia where they announce all the wonderful findings about soy. There's lobbying in Washington. There's advertising and marketing. And they've been extremely successful.
And this is the same soybean, isn't it, that they also use to make plastics?
They make most of the plastics out of the soy oil part.
Okay.
And that could be a wonderful way to use the soybean for plastics and biodiesel fuel and
right.
many other things. But what I'm starting to hear from people who are writing me is that this will be just horrible for the ones who are allergic to soy, because they're trying to avoid it at all costs, and now we may start having it in automobile exhaust. And for the allergic people, this will be tragic.
That's very interesting, too. All right, so when we come back, I want to ask you about soy milk or silk or these other products that are out there, because that's being advertised all over television. It's actually a very clever advertising campaign about soy milk. Surely that could be good for you, right? That's good for women, isn't it? They've been talking about that. Or is that part of the whole soy story? Dr. Kayla Daniel spills the beans, as it were, next on Coast to Coast Live. This is Ian Punnett.